Tonight, we're going to explore the paradoxical situation of time as the tyrant. Time as the tyrant. How do we free ourselves from an attitude or a misperception that time has so much power that it can be a tyrant in a human life? I almost was late tonight because I discovered one of T.S. Eliot's very first poems and that he wrote in college. And it's all about time. And then he spent the rest of his life kind of chewing around on this, trying to more clearly understand time. And I had it because I was considering it for part of this coming Saturday's Poetry Day. This Saturday's Poetry Day is all about the earth. And it's a slightly new, changed format, just slightly, because I'm starting with the Buddha's advice to his son to meditate and to meet life as though he was like earth, and how that this creates a much more acceptance and not being defined by what happens to you any moment of time. And so that is going to be the first quote poem, this little piece of a sutta, and then we're going to go on to looking at earth and how earth inspires us and does these different things to us in four sections, like usually, and you're all invited. And I earlier today I decided I was going to take a sample poem from each of my four sections and bring them in here tonight. And I ended up not being able to do that. That didn't feel right. Like I was taking something that was a piece and I was breaking it apart too soon that I couldn't do it. So I've gone through many variations today about what to do tonight. And one of those was this idea of available. And available, why bring in available in relation to time? I have more and more started teaching about, are you available to the Dhamma, to knowing the Dhamma? And it's not a specific way of practicing as much as it is a specific intention and an aspiration. But in this moment, I wish to be available. In this moment, I wish to be available. And a few of you that are here tonight were at the Awakening of the Nine Bodies residential retreat. And I used that a lot as a part of the instruction in that time. And different people came up afterwards and said that had really helped them find a way to, like, with practice, let's just be available. Just this idea, right now I'm available or I'm not available. Oh, not being available is like this. It's not like we got to fix it, but we see the advantages and disadvantages just by being present for what is. And so we move. And in the same manner, being available to knowing time and seeing time's effect on us, our perception of time, our interpretation, the narratives we create around time, which is often that it's too short, that we don't have enough time, or it's too long. And then the sort of confounding problem of it's going to come to an end, our personal experience in this life of time. It's going to all come to an end. We're going to, quote, run out of time in a kind of finality, that because we're going to die, because this comes to an end. What has been compounded, that's created in a compounded fashion, that is born into time by its very nature of having born into time, dies in time, ceases to be, because it came into time. It is made up of this composite and it was composited in time, and in time those bonds break and we leave time. That's the truth. That's the truth that everybody experiences, and you get to witness this happening over and over again. And that's why one of the heavenly messengers was seeing the truth of death for the Buddha in this way. So, is time inherently a tyrant? Or is there at least some room about relating to time so that it's not a tyrant? When something is particularly unpleasant as a thought, as a body sensation, as an experience that we've had just now or had 6 months ago, but that is so unacceptable to us, we're still living it as though it had just happened, that's a problem. If there's something in the future we really dread, that's a problem. If there's a sense of this moment that is meaningless, that's a problem. If we sense the many times we human beings are so cruel to each other, are so stupid in our decision making, and that's in time, and that's a problem, because even though it's not affecting us in this moment personally, we identify, we care about all human beings, or we care about all human beings and this beautiful earth and the suffering we see being allocated right now, not just for this moment but for the future. It's really a problem. If it was going to be really bad right now but be over in 5 minutes, we wouldn't mind it so much because we could stand up under it. But it's so hard because we see the future. We see the future. The Iraq War, that was so hard for me and many, many, many others, was that I saw the whole thing playing out just as it played out. It was so obvious, if someone had studied history at all, that it was going to play out that way. It wasn't going to play out some other way. It was going to play out the way it did. It could have had little variations, but it was going to play out that way, in which we destroyed a culture. And that is so confounding, because a culture is a way to hold people together through time, right? And we smashed it. We smashed it. And then this will play out however long in time, till there will be some other kind of a stable culture that may be more or less to somebody's liking, but everybody that made this decision will be long gone. And yet, there's consequences through time of something that's been made in a moment's time. Globally, nation, state, locale, community, tribe, our tribe, our family unit, our family of origin unit, generationally through time, and on and on. Thus time, that the experiences in time can loom in such a way that time is a tyrant that is torturing us in various ways. That's like, oh no, oh no. And also in life, we can get more or less through with life before our time has run out in an allocated fashion. It just feels like we're done. Not out of depression, not out of being angry, but feels done. Just feels done. Those are not frequent, but nor are they rare experiences in a human life. A number of people that were perfectly healthy, not depressed, that I have known, very impressive in many ways, and who they are, their attitude, what they've accomplished, the ease that they have in life, they just feel done. They feel done with what? With living this, living out through time more. It's just done. It's not like they're mad about it or that they can't stand it. They're just done. It feels like that this relationship with this stream of time just spills over. Many questions about what to do about that, and very interesting things the Buddha said at various points about that. But that's not the subject for tonight, because that's a complicated, subtle thing to talk about. But I wanted to name that as part of this, our relationship to time. And I'm going to read a little bit of T.S. Eliot to you from the Four Quartets. And in some ways, what I'm going to read tonight is more complicated than what I usually read, which is complicated enough in itself, right? Yeah, and person after person has assured me that this is a bad idea. So my confidence in you and in me and us together is much higher than anyone's assessment. So take that as you will. I'm not really sure how to take it myself, but it is the truth of my experience. So I will often read the section about where he talks about stillness, because stillness is so important in our practice. So I will read about stillness, and I'll just go touch on a few sentences of it to set the conditions. At the still point of the turning world, neither flesh nor fleshless, neither from nor towards, at the still point, there the dance is. So neither flesh nor fleshless, because flesh and fleshlessness are both in time. And at the still point, time, we're outside of time. And that happens in meditation with a lot of frequency. It can be such short duration that you don't notice it. But you can be days in the city where you're outside of time. You don't have a time orientation at all. So then he goes on, neither from nor towards, at the still point, there the dance is, but neither arrest nor movement. So not stopped nor moving. It's not in time. Those are characteristics of time. Things move in time. Things stop in time. You follow that, right? Because you know that's all true. It's not that hard, really. And do not call it fixity, where past and future are gathered. Where past and future are gathered, do not call it fixity, because that puts it back in time. Except for the point, the still point, there would be no dance, and there is only the dance of life, this flow of time. This is a existential truth. It's not your opinion. It's not an interpretation. This still point is the still point of awareness. This knowing capacity is what allows all of us to know everything that unfolds through time in this way. I can only say there we have been, but I cannot say where. You know, when I started with here and now. But when we're in that meditative state of deep awareness, which can come in a moment, it does not have to come just in long sitting. I cannot say where, because that he says, I cannot say where, and I cannot say how long, for that is to place it in time. And at that point, we are relating to time from that point that is not in time. It is not of time. Better said, it is not of time. Because we're still in time in our organic nature, but we're not of time at that moment. We're outside relating through the six senses on a time basis. It's a different orientation. It's a different way of relating. And then he talks about this, what I describe as a beautiful description of a moment of awakening, the inner freedom from practical desire, so there's no wanting mind, the release from action and suffering, release from the inner and the outer compulsion. Whew. You know, it's, those moments are great, and we all have little and small versions of it. And And then he goes on, at the end of this longer thing of that, he then goes back and says, yeah, but this is the sticky point. The sticky point about time is yet the enchainment of past and future, enchainment, being chained, being imprisoned by, the enchainment of past and future woven into the weakness of the changing body, because the body is in change, so in time, so it's always changing, protects mankind, protects humankind from heaven and damnation, which flesh cannot endure. So that he is saying that we, that past and future allow us to not get in that constancy of the ecstatic moment, of that awakening moment, because we within would not live. We would die. Because there's nobody there to eat or drink. There's nothing. It just ends. And that's how some people are able to leave time through deliberately sitting in that way and leave time. So he then goes on this reflection about time. Time passed. Everybody knows your own time passed, right? Your own history, things that have happened to you in time, this is your past. And you have various narratives. We all have various narratives about the past. And time future, we have various expectations and interpretations about the future. Allow but a little consciousness. Time past and time future allow but a little consciousness. To be conscious is not to be in time. And here he goes back and forth about the pluses and the minuses. To be conscious is not to be in time, but only in time can the moment in the rose garden, the moment in the arbor where the rain beat, the moment in the draughty church at Smokefall be remembered. Involved with past and future, only through time is time conquered. So the only way, very Buddhist this, only through time is time conquered. But what moment of time do we know that the Buddha teaches us about where time is conquered? This moment. This is the Buddha's teaching. Not in past and future, but in this moment is time conquered. Being present is the only time we are able to relate in a way that affects what's arising. Otherwise, we're remembering it or anticipating it positively or negatively, this time past and time future. It's right this moment. And it is this moment that that allows us to receive what is coming in this moment wisely. So what's arising in this moment may be really pleasant. Well, I like this. Grab, hold, fight anyone off, want more of it. That happens all the time to us, whether it's the taste of food, where we have that first bite is really good, and the second or third are still really good, but the 15th bite of that, not so good. But by that point, we don't notice because we've grabbed hold of that experience, or of a touch, or of a visual, and so forth and so on. And then likewise, it's easier to understand if it's really negative, we get so reactive, and that reactivity just keeps on living through us. So it is only in this moment that we can possibly choose a little bit affect how we're relating to what's happening. Because we can't relate to the past when we were there at the moment of the past. It's gone. In this, by being in this moment, we can change how we are relating to that past, but we can't change how we related to it at that moment. Nor can we change a future moment because it's not here now. We can condition ourselves, we can create new habits that will allow us to relate to a moment. Our new understandings, new perceptions, new intentions, new aspirations. so that it changes how we relate to it. But only this moment is time conquered. And then he goes on, and this is where it gets a little more complicated. And he's kind of ruminating here. He says, here is a place of disaffection. Not such a great thing to reflect on. Here's a moment of disaffection, time before and time after. In a dim light, neither daylight, investing form with lucid stillness, turning shadow into transient beauty with slow rotation, suggesting permanence, nor darkness to purify and emptying the sensual with deprivation, cleaning affection with the temporal. So it's not like time before and time after don't bring us into this really clear mind moment, nor does it a moment of total emptiness, that darkness when there's nothing there, that emptiness in that way. It doesn't do either of those. Time past and time future don't have that effect on us. This is so obvious that there's no reason for us to ever think about it. It's so obvious. It's clearly true because we're not there in the past. We're not there in the future. So we can't have this brilliant moment because we're not there. Nor can we have this moment where everything is empty and dark and still, because we're not there in the past nor the future. That's because we spend so much time in the past or future. That's a bummer, right? You know, it's because that's we get lost in the past, right? Or we get lost in the future, the wanting, the imagining, the planning for, the justifying, the making it okay that we're not going to get what we want. Where all of this sort of thing, we just get lost in past and future. This is sort of a little hard to read in terms of it's like it sounds more negative. He's not being negative. He's saying, hey, if we're going to be in time, the place to be is in this moment. He's not being negative about time as a whole. Time is a puzzle to be met in some way. Only a flicker over the strained, time-ridden faces, distracted from distraction by distraction, filled with fancies and empty of meaning, tumid apathy, that's really gets me, tumid apathy with no concentration, men and bits of paper whirled by the cold wind that blows before and after time, wind in and out of unwholesome lungs, time before and time after, eructation of unhealthy souls into the faded air. I mean, it's really like saying, come on, this is the truth, you know. And so we all have a lot of blows in life. We just have a lot of disappointments. We have defeats. We have a lot of setbacks. We have a lot of physical and emotional pain. We can't get anything that we like to stay permanent because everything changes. This is all the truth of the First Noble Truth. It's just the way it is. And it's the ennobling truth because our ability to meet this First Noble Truth is ennobling. If we can stay present, as he is suggesting here, then we can have some dance with life. We can have some effect in this. But it's hard. It's really hard. And we think that our only solution, so often we think, is to fix what's arising in time. But as you may have well discovered by now, it often doesn't get fixed. It just doesn't get fixed. It doesn't get fixed till the pain ceases on its own or until something totally new comes up. There's a degree of being available for what is in time. So this isn't what I would have preferred, but that's what is, so I'm available for what is. If we're not available for what is, how do we get to be in the moment? You see, we want out of there. In the nine bodies teaching, we get out of the emotional body, we leave the physical body. We go to these other levels of consciousness where we don't have to be present for it. And we just tune out in various ways. We can tune out through fantasy, we can tune out for creating constructs in our mind, we just tune out. We're not available, time is so, what's arising in time, it's not really time itself, it's what's arising in time and our helplessness around it, while not liking it or liking it too much, that gets us in so much trouble. So, what to do? I'm going to speak tonight on the energetic level of meeting experience. And for some of you, it's Pasha. That's okay. That may be correct. That may be the right understanding. How can I know? It's very hard for us to know when we're deluded or not. I tend to utilize what happens next when I am taking a point of view about something. Did that seem to bring ease or understanding or not? And to myself or others, and then what happens over time with that particular understanding. And so that's how I tend to proceed. But even I could be distorting my evaluations afterwards through time. And so who knows? But insofar as you find this useful. So inside, our practice grows because we learn to be present and we learn not to be reactive to what's arising in the present. We meet it with compassion and curiosity, and that compassion allows us to stay present, and the curiosity allows us to investigate it. So we develop through time, moment to moment in time, a wise, compassionate relationship. And so that is how we prepare ourselves to have a wholesome relationship with what arises in time, not dependent on what it is. Does that make sense? It's not dependent on what arises. We're not counting on what's going to arise. Our bet as to how we're going to relate to time is that if we cultivate compassion and wisdom through mindfulness, so satipanya is mindful wisdom, that we will maximize all possibility for meeting what arises in time. So therefore, we worry less about what's going to happen in the future. We worry less about all of our past mistakes and how we're stuck with these things now, and in many instances going forward by the past. We get free of an attitude of that. So we're less in this past and future in a real way. So energetically, what does that feel like? Energetically, in this moment, something arises that's difficult for some reason. We know it's difficult. We know that we know it's difficult. And at that level, we have enough, because we're being mindful of it in this larger way, this sort of maha sati, that we're able to bring in our wisdom and bring in our compassion. And then we realize, yeah, I've got compassion for this. I'm very mindful of it. I know how to relate to it. But man, does this hurt. Ouch. 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 Oh, it's discouraging. It's so discouraging to the spirit. Oh, can human beings really relate to one another? Am I going to be related to in a way that I wish to? I mean, all of this broad and personal interpretation. That's the second wave hitting us. And then we do all over again. So this is the reactivity. And then we use the same skills of the mindfulness with compassion and with wisdom to like meet that too. And then at some point, we go, we bring an intention to energetically be with this and to let the energy of this just be energy. So our narrative about it becomes less important than the energetic experience it's having on us. Having on us where? In our heart? In our body as a whole? In our vitality? The vitality we have? It's hitting us in all of these different aspects of our being, right? And so by this staying present in this way, there's a shift in the energetic experience because we're willing to receive that experience and not multiply its effect by resistance. So the energy of the hit passes through us. And that really happens. Everyone in this room does this a lot, whether you've ever thought this way or not. You wouldn't be able to stand life otherwise. You just couldn't. That first noble truth is too strong in that way. So then, over time, we can start to have more of an energetic wisdom with what's arising. It becomes less mental and more energetic, so that we feel something arise. And we go through this resignation and so forth, and it becomes more and more acknowledgement and less resignation. But the resignation doesn't necessarily go away unless you're an arahant, because it still hurts. Like, oh, so this too. I mean, that's part of the mantra, this too. It's not me nor mine, but this too. That's what allows us to get this deeper energetic relationship with experience. And so then if we can drop into this energetic level of knowing. And so now it's not so much about the narrative. The narrative is the occasion. The narrative is still there that's caused this whole papancha cycle. The narrative is still there, and it's affecting our bodies. It's affecting all of these different aspects of ourselves. But now we have a degree to which we can have an attitude that this too can cleanse me of clinging. This too becomes a source of letting go. And it's not so much as we get deeper in our practice, and many of you have a lot of practice experience now. It's not so much about the mental aspect, but this energetic experience. Of that, we're relating energetically to the moment in a non-reactive way, not non-reactive because it's pleasant or unpleasant, but a non-reactive way. There's just this little shift energetically, and we're willing to be in time as time is, and the energetic experience of being in time, then. Starts to being less, the past and future are less of a tyrant. And, it's less, because the past and future are so much of what really gets us. This is going to go on forever. I'm never going to find love again. Whatever it is, I lost my child. Whatever it is, and we're defined by that loss or again by the gain. Oh, this is, I finally found happiness, and I'm getting so old that I can't enjoy it when I finally found it, and my body's not letting me do it, and my mind's not allowing me to. Endless examples. I'm just trying to mirror, the various age groups in the room. So this energetic experience in the progress of insight, which was one of my alternatives to talk about tonight, is this kind of intellectual map of what they call the progress of insight, which is presented in different ways. Sometimes it's presented as seven steps in this progress of insight. Sometimes it's 13, depends on how they did all these various things. But this progress of insight, I, in my own experience, and the experience of observing others, including those I have learned from, those that are my colleagues, and those that I have been in the honor of teaching, there is a progress of insight. It's really true. It's really true. We become more able to co-create what's the moment like. We are able, our wisdom and our compassion and the strength of our practice energetically comes in there, and it kind of blends with the pleasant or unpleasantness and all of our associations with that pleasant or unpleasant, and is able to transform the moment in some way. It reduces the power of our interpretation, our narrative about the moment, our physical and emotional experience of the moment to define us. We're still characterized. If you've got a big toothache, you got a big toothache and it hurts, you know. If you've just broken a bone and it's lying there and you're past the shock stage, it hurts. Same emotionally, it hurts. But it's, the nature of that is changed. If we notice that energetically, as opposed to just noticing it like a machine registering our experience, but we start to say, oh, there's an energetic, this everything that's movement is energy. So there's an energetic experience by definition. This is not like a woo-woo kind of thing. All movement is energy. So we start to see, oh, energetically, if I bring all that I know to this moment, there is a little energetic, just this little change through intention, just this little change of energetic, and it becomes something that I can live with in a different way. Nete, nete, not me, not mine. This too is first. This too is part of life, but not me nor mine, not mine is the second part. And it's an energetic experience where we feel different. But again, for a long time, it feels bad. There reaches points where it feels bad, but not so bad. And it takes something. It takes something really more and more unique to feel so bad, right? Because most things that were so bad aren't that bad now. They're only so bad, or they're not so bad, or just bad. You know, and so that is an energetic movement within our own body-mind experience. And the more, in my experience of this, that we are energetically aware of it as opposed to just thinking about it, the more we actually have room to move. Insight affects us energetically, and so this is already happening, but I am experimenting tonight with seeing if it's possible to bring your attention to your energetic level and see if that actually helps you. It definitely helps me. I just recently had an experience that was immediate, that was disappointing. And I went through this, everything I'm telling you, and I could see its effect. And within hours, even more so. Because it's something that is like going to stay as a reality. But within hours, I energetically had a different experience to this thing that is still very unpleasant and very unfair and very hurtful and so forth. Likewise, as many of you know, I've struggled with an illness for well over 2.5 years now, and it had progressively, in an up and down way, gotten better, and it's recently, just out of nowhere, under conditions that were more favorable for it to continue to get better, actually it's gone backwards a bit. It's gone backwards under more favorable conditions. So therefore, by all the rules of logic and the way we know about things, it should be better, right? Didn't turn out that way. Just hasn't, at least right now. It's gone backwards. That there's a way of accepting that through all of the mindfulness, the compassion, which I, because I've practiced so long, I do quite well. But it's relatively. But it's another thing to just energetically shift to feel the energy of that, because the energy is like so clamping down because it's a kind of collapsing energy, and so then it gets a kind of the reactivity to that. Is the mental reactivity of that would be a clamping down or a pushing down, right? That does not have to happen. But it takes me, with my mindfulness, to energetically go to feel what my choices are, to choose non-suffering over suffering, energetically. When I have space and time around it, that becomes possible. When there's no space and time, it's too subtle a thing to do when I've got meetings, for the next 8 hours and all. It's just too much. I just got to stay focused on what I'm doing in my service work. And that's okay, too. But energetically, that we can move things is worth knowing. And I'm not sure I'm conveying this, but maybe I will learn in time to convey it in a way that I can't yet. Because it's so subtle. First of all, it's just to be interested. What's he talking about? Is there an energetic experience I have? And I'm suggesting that every moment you're having an energetic experience, but the way you find them is in big energetic experiences first, because you can feel the energy of something big. And then once you learn to attune the body and the vitality that you have in the emotional body you have, it gets more and more possible. Those of you who take Tai Chi or Qigong or Aikido or yoga, if it's taught by people who are interested in this level, which none of, in all those practices, people can, amazingly enough, ignore the energy body in this way and ignore all this feeling of energy. But many teachers are actually pointing you to the energetic experience. If you ever ran, if you've danced, you, at times in your dance, when you've gone into this, you've felt it's been an energetic experience. You're dancing. At times, maybe not most frequently, but at times in lovemaking, it's energetic. Even on a hike, the energetic experience is more than the scene, more than anything. There's just you're in the wah of nature, and you're feeling that is an energetic experience when you're just being blown away by nature. That's an energetic experience. It's not mental. How could it be mental alone? It just doesn't make any sense. That would be the machine that measures that tells you the cost of the supermarket. It registers cost of things, but it doesn't have any experience of it. So that's not what we do. We have an experience. So experience is this movement that is energetic in this way. So that's the lesson for tonight. When he says, but only in time can the moments in the rose garden, the moment in the arbor where the rain beat, I feel, and I can't teach otherwise because I feel this way, I'm not wanting to be dead to what arises in time. I would not consider that being a conquering of time at all. I would consider that being defeated by what arises in time. This is just a view. Now, this is the things I've said before are either true or not true, which you can determine. But this is view and opinion, because I want to feel the breeze on my face. I want to feel the warmth of sunshine, the bite of the cold wind. I choose life in that way. So so I'm not wanting to just register it and not have a personal relationship to the moment. I will take the dukkha of it in order to get to be present. But then, having chosen that, I am also choosing then how I'm going to relate to the dukkha of it. You can have a very different strategy than that. Then energetically you would do something different, because there is a kind of way of deadening deadening mind and body. I am not about to teach that to you, but there's ways to do all of that if that's one's aspiration. It's very nihilistic, and the Buddha certainly said over and over again, I don't teach nihilism, so I don't think it's part of the way the Buddha is teaching us to be with the truth of dukkha that arises in time. And with that, I'm going to bring us to an early close so that we can have a celebration of our 20 years as a community, as Sangha. Whether you've only been here 2 months or 2 weeks or 12 weeks or 20 weeks or 2 years or on and on and on, you're part of a movement, a part of a people energetically coming together and building a kind of center by which they come together. And it's worthy, and it's important and for we human beings to recognize that, because it's easy for the center to fray, the sense of community to fray. We're seeing that in our country. We've seen it a period of time where some members of the community weren't considered in various ways. And so the community of a country, our community of our country as a whole is so splintered at the moment. So very important at any level. So there's that kind of being aware of the phenomena of what's being celebrated and not just our narrative. Again, being mindful in this larger way. And I will now turn it over to... I should say thank you for your attention.